Do you have an advance directive in place? Maybe yours is called a healthcare directive or a living will. I don't have one. I'm Veronica. I'm in my mid-40s, healthy, hoping to live another 30, 40 years or more. But sooner or later, I will die. But before that, I'll be dying. That dying process could prevent me from making my own healthcare decisions. If it comes to that, I'm not likely to know what's going on. But my loved ones? That could be really hard on them. I don't want to leave that stress for the people around me. To find out more, I talked with Jeanette Lindgren. She's a nurse and care coordinator with Care Partners. She told me she had a 60-year-old cousin who suffered a brain injury with no advance directive in place.
Recently, a cousin of mine was in a car accident. She's 60 years old and brain injury and didn't have an advance directive, but had openly spoken to her brother and her children about the fact that, no, I don't want to be kept alive by artificial means. You know, if I'm going to need a whole lot of rehab and never return to my original state, I don't want to be here.
There was nothing on paper, no single person in charge, but Jeanette and others in the family remembered those conversations.
So because they had communicated it, they had many meetings about this because she didn't have an advance directive. So the family was brought in a number of times to be asked the same questions to make sure that the answers were
consistent.
And they ended up, you know, taking her off the respirator and she died. But I know in my heart too that that's what my cousin would have wanted.
After I talked with Jeanette, I met with my husband Bob. We looked at the healthcare directive forms together, and mostly what came out of that first conversation were atmospheric concerns about the room I would be dying in, no sage burning, not a smell I like, and good music. Play lots of Van Morrison, please. There's more to thinking these issues through than I first thought. In the beginning, I figured I'd just be answering a few questions. Do I want to be resuscitated? Intubated? Tube-fed? For me, it all depends. I found that part of filling out an advance directive is figuring out what it depends on for you, getting to your basic feelings, hopes, and fears. Like, what if they quit too soon? The medical people. What if I could live? Sandy Stover is a local doctor. I sat in on her death talk, given at a training session for new Care Partners volunteers. She explained that having a DNR, a do not resuscitate order, doesn't mean I won't be treated.
You also can't have someone in a car accident who gets knocked out and can't speak. Oh, they have a DNR, they don't ever want to be resuscitated, so, you know, they're choking on their blood there, well, let's not do anything, you know, because they have a DNR, you know. Because it's a limited time process that's easily reversible. So you don't look for the advance directive first. You know, you look to see what can you do to solve the situation. And maybe in a week or two when they're not waking up, then you start making the decisions about what's the goal of therapy at that point in time.
Nurse Jeanette Lindgren.
What we sort of get caught up when we're doing this is we forget that it's a terminal state that this becomes active.
Okay.
So no matter what age you are, if you are in a terminal state, mm-hmm. What do you want the next step to be?
So I thought more about it. What if I answer the questions wrong? How right do my answers need to be? And what if I change my mind? Well, it turns out that changing my mind is not that big a deal. When you file a new living will, it trumps an old one. And I should be reconsidering this as I grow older, as my health conditions change, as my loved ones come and go. As for answering the questions wrong, well, I need to give it some thought, discuss it with the people who care about me, and trust my comfort level. Won't I know when I have the right answer? As I ponder these questions, I've found that it's helpful to hear what other people have experienced. There's a website called honoringchoices.com. It has several video clips of people discussing their own situations. Another good resource is theconversationproject.com. They have a conversation starter kit that helped me identify what role I wanted to play in decisions, what kind of care I wanted, and what I wanted my loved ones to know. So it all boils down to deciding what's important to you and letting people know.
You need to have someone that you've communicated this with, they understand it, and they're willing to stand behind it for you. Because sometimes you meet resistance in decisions that are made about end of life.
There's lots of information out there. Things to read, people to talk to, websites to explore. I could listen to Jeanette and Dr. Stover say how important it was to do now. But what I needed was a kick in the pants. A deadline. Huh. Interesting word, deadline. For me, it came when I decided to share this journey with you. Lord, if I ever needed someone, I need you. Lord, if I ever needed someone, I need you. So here's what I've learned so far. Start having the conversations now. Give yourself time for them, but not so much time that you don't do it. Start by facing death with someone in conversation. Discuss the death or illness of a friend or loved one, or feelings about your own. Then put something on paper. Maybe listen to some music while you do it. It doesn't have to be Van Morrison. My agent, my instructions, my hopes and wishes. These sections of the form, the questions, all matter, all intertwine. I learn about one from another. It depends. If I'm healthy when I get hit by a truck, then yeah, treat me. Unless or until you can see it's futile, give me that chance. When you see it's futile, let my husband kiss me goodbye. If I linger, play some Van Morrison. Enjoy a glass of wine. Take care of each other. Meanwhile, get going on your own healthcare directive. Have the conversations. You'll be glad you did. And so will your loved ones. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Weddock.